it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 313. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies series down in Miami against the Marlins. Phillies lose another series to Miami, one of the worst teams in baseball, and the time for this team to go on that run that they keep talking about is running out. And so we'll get into the series. A lot of ugly moments. We'll talk a little bit about Cesar Hernandez. We'll talk about Nick Pivetta, Zach Eflin, JT Realmuto, and the gang, all of them coming up here in the next little while. Joining me, as they do every Sunday night, is the head guy at The Good Fight, Justin Clue. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how are you, buddy?
I feel like the bad guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark when he comes in with the coat hanger and just says, "Now, what should we talk about?" And that's kind of where I'm at with this team. Like, what should we talk about tonight? What awful thing should we hit on first? There's a couple options, so I'm very excited.
Yes, I can't even believe we get the privilege of talking about this baseball team. And joining us for the first time as a married woman is the great Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. Again, you can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how is married life? How are you holding up? Has the Phillies haven't ruined your marriage already, have they?
No, the Phillies couldn't possibly ruin my marriage. We began dating while the Phillies sucked.
Well, there you go.
And considering that they're continuing to suck, things haven't changed.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. And so we have a full show here, and let's get into this series against the Marlins. And for whatever reason, guys, this team, they can't beat Miami. It's really it's mind-blowing when you think about it. They're now 7-9 against Miami this season. Everybody else in the East has beaten the hell out of this team this year. They've lost. The Phillies have now lost five straight series against teams with losing records. Mm-hmm, so it's not just Miami. Mm-hmm. It's all teams with losing records. The Phillies are not getting their business done against bad teams. And we keep hearing the Phillies talk about going on a run, going on a winning streak, and these are the teams you need to beat in order to do that. And Justin and I talked about it on Continued Success on Saturday morning. And Paul Boyer and I discussed it a little bit on Hittin' Season 312 about, you know, if you're going to go on that winning streak that Kapler and all the Phillies players keep saying the team is going to go on, they have this run in them, they're better than they've played. Well, you know, this is a type of series you have to at least win two out of three. And really, even with Bryce Harper not in the lineup, you should sweep. And so, Liz, let me start with you. The Phillies 7-9 against Miami this season. They did it with Bryce Harper on paternity leave. But, you know, were the expectations, even without Bryce Harper in the lineup, too high? Should we expect a team without its best player to sweep a team like Miami?
We should expect the Phillies to sweep Miami because Miami is bad. But I don't think anyone actually expected that to happen. Like, that's what should have happened. I mean, did any of you expect that to happen? My guess is
I expected the Phillies with Aaron Nola to beat the last place Marlins today. That's as far as my expectations went in this series. And they didn't. They couldn't even do that. So, no, I didn't expect a sweep.
No, I expected them to hold on to a 7-run lead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
That one, too.
Yeah.
I was at a barcade in Louisville, and it was ruining my time. It was ruining my time playing an endless number of pinball machines.
Yeah, both the losses.
Like, thanks, Phillies.
Both the losses in this series are entirely winnable for two different reasons.
Oh.
And we're definitely lost.
Like, we're driving back to where we were staying, and I'm just ranting. And Sean says, "Save it for the podcast." I'm like, I can't. It has to come out of me. I have to yell out the window at 11:30 at night in this random neighborhood because I'm so angry.
That's such a nice way of saying, you know, please stop.
Save it for the podcast. Shut up.
Yeah, it's
He was well within his rights. I was ranting.
Well, you had good reason. I mean, yeah, you blow a 7-0 lead to a team like Miami, and Vince Velasquez gives it away. And then they actually, you know, we forget they went back on top by a couple runs, and then Nick Pivetta gives it all away, and then some. And then they end up putting a 19 spot on the Phillies, and Justin and I covered that in depth in the latest issue of episode of Continued Success. But, you know, I'm trying to figure out which of the two losses in this series was worse, the losing a 7-0 third inning lead, or when you have a chance to win the final game of this series. And you know, should they have lost that first game? Absolutely not. But you have here in the third game of the series on Sunday, you have a chance to win the series with your best pitcher, with Aaron Nola on the mound, a guy who'd been red hot. He'd been pitching as well as anybody in baseball against a last place team. And he gets a 2-0 lead and then gives up three runs in the bottom of that inning. Now, obviously, Nola pitched well enough to win on Sunday, but he did give up those three runs in the same inning. The Phillies finally scratched out their two wins, and I'm kind of not sure how to feel about this Nola performance, because clearly he pitched well enough for them to win. Three runs in seven innings, that's a good outing, but the fact that he got a two-run lead late on that Rhys Hoskins homer, and then the very next half inning gave it all away again to one of the worst teams in baseball. Justin, was Nola done in by a bad offense, or does he need to be an ace and protect a two-run lead in that situation, even if it is just 2-0?
Boy, that's put me in a tough spot.
It's a fun question, isn't it? Yeah, enjoy.
I think Aaron Nola has got to be able to protect that lead. I mean, it's asking a lot. It is, but that's why he has the ace status, to protect a two-run lead. That's why you look forward to his start. That's why you need to have a stopper in your rotation, because if your offense isn't putting up the numbers you want to see on a regular basis, you want a pitcher among your options who can go out there and stake a couple of runs to, and he can make them stand up. I mean, we saw that happen a lot back in the day. But Aaron Nola is, you know, if you are an ace, that is something you should be able to do. And especially now, when this is like every game is a big game, every series is a big series, coming off a series where, you know, we talked about the Phillies keep having these chances to build momentum because of Aaron Nola, because they keep coming around to him in the rotation. He wins a game. Maybe the next guy wins a game. Suddenly we're like, okay, maybe they can win a couple of games in a row. So winning two games in Boston was great. And seeing him back on the mound today was like, this is a great opportunity to take 2 or 3 from the Marlins. That loss was terrible, but the bats came back in that 9-3 win, and then having Aaron Nola face a last place lineup really should have been enough. 7 runs should have been enough in the first game too, but you know, that was a different kind of loss. So you give him 2 runs on a day when the offense is just squelching, and you're without Bryce Harper, you're without your hottest hitter. And yeah, you know, he should be able to do that. In the broadest sense, he should be able to protect that lead. I know it's difficult. I know there's a million little X factors that go into that. But you know what? Giving up 3 runs after your offense scores 2 runs, you know what that's called? It's called a dirty inning. And we have a whole podcast about how it's terrible. So as a good pitcher, you know, you don't show up on dirty innings too often when you're an Aaron Nola level of pitcher. So there's a reason for that. He's their ace. He should be able to protect that lead. Now, I'm not going to come down on Aaron Nola really hard, since he's been one of the few bright spots on this team this year. But just to answer your question, yeah, the ace should be able to hold a 2-run lead during a playoff stretch when every win is important and you're playing a last-place team. Yeah, it shouldn't have been that hard to beat the Marlins.
There are 9 other guys. There are, 8 other guys in that lineup. I mean, I object to pinning this on Nola. I do. You know, that's not too many runs for the offense to score against the Marlins. That's just giving the offense such a huge pass. How many times has Nola been there for the offense?
I would like...
How many times has he lifted them
up? I would like
up?
You to go back in previous episodes and hear me not giving the offense a pass on so many occasions. This is more me addressing reality. That on this day, the offense did what it does a lot, and it just disappeared for no reason against a team it should have been hammering. And if that's the case, then you got to be able to rely on your number one pitcher to be like, well, everyone else sucks today. Guess it's on me. And he should be able to shoulder that load. He should.
I just don't. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't disagree with you. I don't necessarily disagree, but I also just feel like saying, hey, all of this is on you, guy who's had trouble this season. So snap two.
I don't think I'm. I don't think I'm saying it's all on Aaron Nola. You can't look at a 3-2 loss to the Marlins and say, "Oh, there's only one guy to blame for this, and his name is the guy."
But should he be able to hold up the offense like two run? Like, I don't think 3 runs is an unreasonable number of runs to give up. Nor do I think it's unreasonable for the Phillies' offense to have scored another one.
Sure, I think part of it too is when he gave up those 3 runs. I mean, they just go ahead on the 2-run home run by Rhys Hoskins, and then it's like your neck gets snapped around when the Marlins score 3 right away. And I think it shouldn't take the life out of the offense when something like that happens, but it did. You know, it totally sucked the life out of the offense. And I blame the offense for this game because, you know, they score 11 runs in the first game of the series, 9 runs in the second game, and then Aaron Nola to finish things off. You can't get to that magical 4-run number that this team needs to hit in order for them to win. But I do place a lot of blame on and not blame. I guess blame's not the right word, and that maybe I should have used a different word to describe it. But dissatisfaction with the fact that Nola, immediately after being given the 2-run lead, gave it right back up. And that's not something I know. I don't know if Max Scherzer would have done that. I don't know that, you know, one of the other great aces would have done that. And I'm not trying to, you know, rip on Aaron Nola, because he has been great, you know, since early May for this team. And so it's not fair. It really isn't fair to kind of pin this loss on him. But, you know, they really, really, really needed this game. And in the sixth inning, they gave him a 2-run lead and he gave it right back. And that's where I'm having, that's why I'm feeling a little bit uncharitable towards Aaron Nola here on Sunday night as I'm reacting to all this.
This loss does not change my opinion of Aaron Nola whatsoever, but I do think it's not too much to ask your number one ace to, on a day when he knows his offense isn't going to be able to carry him, to stake that lead. I don't think that's too much to ask. That's his job.
Well, what's amazing is that even after losing 2 out of 3 to the Marlins this weekend, the Phillies actually enter the week in a little bit better of a position than they started the weekend in the wild card race, which is absolutely. I mean, this wild card race is. I don't even have my heart. My heart's not even in it anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, it's continuing to drag on just to taunt us.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just going to keep going. Like, we wanted this at the beginning of the season. At the beginning of the season, we wanted a race and we'd be right in it. Only we didn't anticipate that it would be a race between a whole bunch of teams who all kind of suck. Like, I used to think it was parody, but it's not the good kind of parody. No one is doing well right now.
Yeah, no, this isn't good parody. This is teams stumbling over each other, drunken, you know, in a drunken stupor as they try to make their way home from the bar. And that's what the last, you know, this last month of the season is probably going to look like, unless somebody gets hot. But the Phillies 67-62 are still just 1.5 games behind the Cubs for the second wild card spot. They were two games out when the weekend got underway, because the Cubs were swept by the Nationals. So the Nationals helped out the Phillies this weekend, and the Brewers and the Mets are both as flawed as the Phillies are, and they had bad weekends. Mets fans are now all over that team because they had a terrible weekend, and the Brewers have just as many problems as the Phillies do. It's crazy. The Mets and Brewers, 2 games out of the wild card, 1/2 game behind the Phillies, and so here we are. I mean, in this totally uninspiring, unfun playoff chase that the Phillies are in right now, and you know, I frankly the Phillies playoff odds are too low at this point. You know, as I was looking on FanGraphs, you know, looking at the playoff odds, I think they were around 8 or 9%. I'm getting another look at it right now, but it's amazing to me that, you know, when you're looking at this team and the fact that they are where they are, the playoff odds, really, it's not crazy, because just 1.5 games out with a little more than a month left in the season, they are still right in this. The Phillies are still right in this, even though they've shown no ability. They've shown really no sense that they're ever going to get on any kind of a hot streak here, Liz.
Again, it just feels torturous. Like, maybe it should be higher, but no one should be that high. Like, somehow, like a bunch, like the Cubs, the Phillies, the Cardinals, the Mets, the Nationals, all of them should somehow miss the play. Like, I feel like we all deserve to miss the playoffs. And then also every other team. Like, just have a tiny playoff pool of, like, the 3 teams, 2 teams, maybe 1 team that deserves it. Could we just send one representative to the World Series this year? Because I don't want to see some of these terrible teams duke it out, because like inevitably it's going to be like the Mets and Nationals, and they'll both just suck.
Yeah. No, I
don't want to see that. Like, I'm not even entertaining the idea that the Phillies could be in it. Like, they could be. I mean, sure.
It's interesting the comparisons that have been made as this season has dragged on and the Phillies have failed to go on the big run we keep hearing about. That a guy responded to the Good Fight Twitter account today and said, like, oh, what if they sneak into the wild card and go on a tear 2014 Royals style? And it's like, I don't, you know, I'm not saying that's necessarily stupid to think. That's sure, they could do that. It's just more like the comparisons are just shifting with less and less as of the season left. It's just looking for like, what has this ever, has anything like this ever happened before? Has a team ever been painfully average and then really, really good for 2 weeks and then won the World Series? Like, it's when you're running out of, you're just running out of evidence. You're running out of space to produce the evidence that would create enthusiasm. And I think we're going to see that till the end of the regular season. We're going to see people in disbelief that this team that was set up to be so good was not so good.
You know, I keep thinking about the 2007 season, you know, and for a lot of that season, it didn't look like the Phillies were going to make any kind of a run. I mean, because they were, you know, what was it, 7.5 games out with 17 to play? Isn't that the number it was? Or 7 games out with 17 to play that they made up on the Mets? But they showed in 2007 at a couple different points, like with that 4-game sweep of the Mets in Philadelphia, that legendary series with the that ended with the Chase Utley walk-off hit, that they had the ability to kind of get hot and they had the ability to kind of string some wins together. But people kind of forget that right after that series at home, the Phillies went into a tailspin.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that series went into a tailspin and went from being, I think it was about 2 games out to being 7 games out again with 17 to play. And so when I think about, can this team go on a run again? I think back to 2007 and I think to myself, how did that team do it? What happened with that team that they made that happen? They went on that run. And one is they beat the team that was directly in front of them quite a bit, which is fine when you're going to try and win the division. But when you've got a bunch of teams that you're battling it out with, you can't make up all those games all at once. And, you know, I don't see the path that this team can take to get to the playoffs. But again, it's just a game and a half. And with the Mets 2 games out of the wild card, Fangraphs has their playoff percentage at 33%, and the Phillies at 7.6%. They're basing a lot of that off of the rest of their strength of schedule the rest of the way. But, you know, this season is just so bizarre, and it's just not been much fun. But, of course, I remember the 2007 season not being much fun until that last little stretch. And so, when you're saying, you know, guys are tweeting at the Good Fight and, you know, wondering if this team can go on a run like this, I'll bet you if you talked to me in 2007 at this same point, I would have told you no way there was no way it was possible this team could go on a run.
I mean, maybe we're just far enough removed from 2007. Like, this team is, it's obviously, we've seen complete turnover, and this is a sort of a dawning of a new era of Phillies baseball that doesn't seem like that sort of magic could be a part of this team's season. I mean, yeah, I guess is the question more like, are we gonna look silly for doubting this team as much as we did throughout the 2019 season? I still feel like no. You know, I don't feel like this is a team that's ready to really get together and rally. And I know we're gonna talk about this in a little bit, but like the hustle narrative, this is just one component of like the overall vibe this team gives off. And we've obviously come down on people who criticize players for not hustling enough a lot on this podcast, and for good reason. But as the sentiment kind of grew today, when Cesar Hernandez didn't leg a what could have been a double into a double and just had settled for a single, this happens so much that it becomes difficult to defend in the way that we defend it, where it's like, it's not a big deal. You know, guys shouldn't be, you know, hurt, going all the way on every play, going to hurt themselves, blah, blah, blah. But it happens so much with this team that it's you're almost like, okay, I'm starting to see like the point here. They've really done this so cartoonishly much that it's like, all right, yeah, you gotta run a little harder, Cesar. Like, you, come on, you gotta do it. And I'm not saying this has necessarily cost the Phillies wins, but it, you know, when you talk about the overall vibe of a team and what your feelings are on a team, you can only go by what you see. And last year, we saw a team that looked absolutely lost at the plate, that looked totally deflated and didn't want to be on the field anymore. And I don't think we've reached that point this year, but there's just, you know, there's a reason that we're not making more 2007 comparisons, because they won that many games because, you know, that they had to, you know, they had to win. There was a reason they were in that hole, and it was because they had played themselves into it. I mean, their longest win streak in 2007 was 6.
Yeah.
That's still longer than this team's. Yeah. Like, they're still stuck at 4. They can't get past that number. And you know, it's a new team. It's a looser collection of guys. Again, we've talked about clubhouse culture. I don't think there's anything particularly parasitic about this roster, but they seem like they get along and everything, but something's just not clicking on the field. And I even with visions of 2007 in my head, I can't see this team taking off the way they did, even though every time they win, there's that little feeling of like, maybe this is the time. Maybe Bryce Harper comes back, and you know that whole narrative could have really made sense if they'd won 2 out of 3 against the Marlins. But yeah, it's just that they're still rolling that same rock up the hill. And I want to be able to say something else, but like we said a couple of weeks ago, show me something else. You know, make me a liar. But they haven't yet, and it's late August. It's not even mid August. Like, we're running out of space here.
Liz, what is it, do you think, that makes it that a team can't beat the Marlins like this? You know what I mean? Like, what is it? I mean, like, I understand some teams play down to their opponents, but this is a really bad baseball team. The Phillies they can't beat this team. I mean, I know you don't have the answer, but I just, how is it that they can't beat this baseball team?
The Phillies seem to have bad luck against, you know, one NL East opponent at a time. For a few years, it was the Mets. They could not
win
a game against the Mets.
Right.
It was terrible, constantly, home, away, didn't matter. You were losing to the Mets, and you had to watch. Now it's the Marlins, and it could not come. At least when it happened with the Mets for a few years, the Mets were a defensible team. Now it's moved to the Marlins, and there's nothing defensible about that. Like, there's nothing provable. You just see patterns, and you want to make sense of chaos, mm-hmm. you know, so you assign something to it. And that's exactly what we're doing, but it's like they get into their heads. It's like they're like, God, we have to win this game. We have to win this game. Let's all try really, really, really hard to win this game. And when they try hard to win the game, it's just like they end up accidentally swinging too hard and hitting themselves in the back of the head.
Do you think they are trying too hard? Like when they play a team, I mean, they went 5-0 against the Cubs and Red Sox over the last 2 weeks, and 2-4 against the Marlins and the Padres. Is it that they're putting too much pressure on themselves? You think that they know these are series they should win and games they should win and teams they should beat? I mean, the offense blew their doors off. The offense was great on Friday and Saturday, and then, you know, a game they had to win, they go into a shell. I mean, that's what I guess that's my big question. It seemed like that's kind of what you were saying, Liz, is that maybe they get inside their heads and they try too hard.
Yeah, I think that's as good an explanation as any.
Yeah.
I mean, you go up against, you know, the Red Sox and the Cubs, two teams that are great. You go in thinking, all right, we got to work hard. You know, these guys are so much better than we are, you know, or, you know, they've got, you know, whatever it is you tell yourself when you're facing a worthy opponent. When you go in to face the Marlins, I feel like now it's a combination of God, you know, they're so easy to beat, geez, and holy crap, they've beat us a whole lot. This is embarrassing. Yeah. It's like a combination of those two things. When you put them together, it's like oil and water. They just don't mix, and you get this mess that we see on the field that's just, like, it's partially trying too hard and then not trying hard enough. It's like Cesar's not running it out, but like, you know, Rhys Hoskins swings through a pitch in the middle of the zone. Like, it's the extremes of both sides, and you don't, they can't even have a coherent narrative when they lose.
Yeah. No,
every
I get
single
it.
One of their losses is like, it's pitching, it's offense, it's,
there's a different,
you know,
reason. Yeah,
the
there's
field. Who knows? You know,
that's the thing. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. There's no cohesion to how this team plays. There's a version of them.
And that's why it's so hard to talk about
them.
Yeah,
there's a part of them that lets them down in the worst way every night, to the point that you can't even overcome the parts of the team that are performing. I mean, I'm looking at it now. The Marlins are last or second to last in every major offensive category in the National League, except doubles. They're 12th in doubles. Meanwhile, the Phillies are in the bottom half of most of those categories. They're like 10th, they're 12th, they're 8th. Actually, in doubles, they're tied for 4th, weirdly enough. Whoa, doubles, wow. Phillies and Marlins. So get ready for a high doubles series, what everyone was looking
right.
for. But yeah,
sound like Tim McCarver.
But yeah, the Marlins, last place in most of these categories. I mean, this is the most beatable team in baseball in 2019, and probably will continue to be for a stretch of time. And the only explanation for not being able to beat them is that you are, for some reason, not as good as the last place team that night. And there's a version of this team that looks like it is a last place team every night. You know, whether it's Nick Pivetta grooving fastballs down the plate because he's panicking, or like Liz said, Rhys Hoskins swinging through pitches, or even bad luck like Bryce Harper. Not bad luck, just circumstance.
Unfortunate
that Bryce Harper is
stuff.
Not with the team because of his wife having a baby. So, like, you know, there's a version of this team that is a last place team every night, I feel like, every time they lose.
Yeah. No, and sometimes it's a bullpen giving up a big ninth inning lead. And you're right. You can't pin this team's jello. You can't pin their performance or lack of performance on any one thing. I mean, it's something different every night. This series was so 2019 Phillies because everybody had a hand in making sure the Phillies lost 2 out of 3 here. And I want to get a little bit more into the Cesar Hernandez stuff just for a few more minutes, because I thought some of the comments after the game were interesting, especially in relation to some other comments made this weekend about other players on the team. So we're going to just talk briefly about the Cesar Hernandez thing. That's coming up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, breaking down a dispiriting series loss to the Marlins this weekend. Phillies lose 2 out of 3 and yet remain just a game and a half out of the wild card in the National League playoff race. Again, as Justin mentioned in the last segment before we went to break, we had another instance of a Phillies player not hustling out of the box. And if you listen to the WIP morning show at all, or if you listen to any talk or sports talk radio at all, you're gonna hear about this on Monday for sure. And it's going to take up more of the conversation than it probably should, because really the reason this team lost this game on Sunday was not because Cesar Hernandez did not hustle when he hit that line drive off the right field wall, but it is an issue here. And Gabe Kapler said after the game that it was a totally unacceptable base running play. He said it was addressed on the bench, that he had a conversation with Cesar after the game, that he understands it's unacceptable, there's no excuse for it. He said that strong veteran leaders in the clubhouse will address it as well. And then Kapler was asked if he thought about pulling Hernandez from the game, and he said, quote, "It's just an unacceptable base running play." So he didn't really answer the question about whether he thought about pulling Hernandez from the game. And, you know, Hernandez himself said it was
a
lapse in judgment. Yeah, I mean, come on, take one side. Have a take, coward. It's just one. I can't. And there's the thing. This is not something I've said. Here's the thing. I'm going to have to edit some of these "here's the things" out after this is all over, because I just keep, that's one of my running mantras here in this game.
Got a lot of things. Got a lot of things going on.
Lots of things.
But here's the things. I mean, the Phillies have already told us that they don't really think the hustling thing is a major deal. Matt Klentak said as much, you know, in one of the news conferences when the Gene Segura thing was happening. And I think all three of us agree that, you know, forcing a hitter to run hard on every single ground ball is kind of a silly expectation to have. But it would really be nice if Phillies hitters stopped feeding into this hustle narrative by doing nonsense like this.
By actually hustling.
Just by hustling. Because it really isn't that hard, you know, especially when it's a 0-0 game and you're going to sit there and you're going to pimp a home run in a 0-0 game when against a last place team that you've struggled to beat. And by doing that, you fail to get into scoring position in a game where you might win that thing 1-0 with Aaron Nola on the mound. You know, I mean, you're getting later into the game. One run might win this game, and Hernandez doesn't do what he has to do. And so now you know, I blame Hernandez because he's feeding into the narrative of the hustle thing. And, you know, like, Justin, I'm kind of like you. I'm at the point now where I'm like, this team's not good enough to sit there and pimp home runs. This is a team that has to scratch and claw for every single run that they're going to get, especially in an Aaron Nola start. And that's where I am on the Cesar thing. Do you think, you know, at the end, do you think that it would have been should Kapler have pulled him in this particular situation?
Well, I mean, this team's legacy is going to be that it turned all of us into the worst versions of ourselves, that we're going to find all of the takes we've been sticking by for years reversed, and suddenly we'll find ourselves on the other side of the WIP fence and be like, oh my God, we're on this side now. And I think right now what we can cling to is that something like, no, he shouldn't have benched Cesar in that situation because it didn't make any sense to. Because that would have genuinely made the team worse in a game they had to win. Bryce Harper's not here. Cesar Hernandez isn't Bryce Harper. But there were no good options to replace him with. This is not the time in the season where we're going to be teaching lessons. That's what makes this so stupid, that it shouldn't also, the importance of this game should mean that there aren't reasons to teach guys lessons like that. They should just be running. But this is also not, you know, a disciplinary time. And if Gabe says the veteran players are going to handle it, whatever. He's also just lost the benefit of the doubt as far as disciplining goes, where he said, it's going to be different this year, and then it wasn't, and people were like, so is this going to happen or not? And he was like, oh, you know, here's a non-answer, and that's all you're going to get from him on this particular topic, I think, moving forward. Maybe they are policing it. Maybe JT Realmuto cornered Cesar in the locker room and was like, you better run out your blah, 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 blah. But, like, you know, probably that didn't happen either. At the end of the day, these guys know when they screw up in public like this, and they know, you know, Gene Segura, whoever it is, they know to go to the press and be like, no, oh, you know, it's just, that can't happen. This is unacceptable. I know what my job is, and I'm going to do it as hard as I can moving forward. You know, there's a script for this. Bottom line, they shouldn't be having to play this desperately. They shouldn't be having to teach guys lessons, and they shouldn't have, you know, they shouldn't be in this hole in the first place. This is just an added narrative that's just needless and stupid, but, you know, it's forced itself into the conversation, and, you know, it at the end of the day, you gotta run that out, Cesar. And if this is the first time, you know, who cares? If the Phillies are up a couple of games in the division, fine. Rhys Hoskins hit the home run, it wound up not mattering anyway. But this has just been going on for so long, yeah. And it's been different guys, and it's been all season. And it's just, at the end of the day, you got to be like, God, just do us the favor of not having to talk about this.
Know, right. Liz, that's all I really want is I want to have to not listen to this. There's other more important things to focus on. But do you think that Gabe Kapler should have taken Cesar out of the lineup after this happened? Again?
There's no good answer to this. Like, Justin is right, of course not, but in a just world where a guy who screws up has to pay the price, and so does everyone else, he gets taken out. Like, he should be running it out. Like, how do you not do that in that situation? Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's like 2018 all over again. There's no sense of urgency from anybody, and I think that's what we're missing, a sense of, like, it's not trying too hard, it's like actually... I don't know what the difference is now. There's a difference between trying too hard and looking like you're trying.
Trying smart.
Yeah. Yes. Like, urgency. Knowledge that there are limited numbers of chances left. And communicating that through the things that you do.
Yeah. No.
And how you play. And, like, we didn't see that from them last year. And that's what, they gave up. Like, whether or not they say they gave up, we feel like they gave up because it looked like they did. Mm-hmm. And it's feeling like that again because a team trying to get a playoff spot, the good ones don't do that. How many times have we heard about the Dodgers this year?
No. Yeah.
How many of their players have done this? I mean, granted, we're not as steeped in the Dodgers as, you know, as we are at the Phillies, but... You know, one of their big-name players not doing that would be a story. I feel like maybe it's happened once this year. I do have a memory of that. But
yeah, well, now that Puig's gone, that's not really a lightning rod for them to blame everybody.
Exactly. Well, I mean, but, you know, like, good teams don't do this, and the Phillies have done this all year.
I will say the Braves just benched Ronald Acuna, or they pulled him from a game after he turned what should have been a long hit into like what he thought was going to be a home run and turned into a single for something very similar. But I think you can make an example of a player like that when you have a lead in the division like the Atlanta Braves do. You know, they can afford to lose a game on principle. The Phillies have put themselves in a position where they can't afford to lose a game on principle at this point, especially right. if that principle is not something the team really believes in anyway.
He hasn't been holding guys accountable all season.
Well, that's what
and
I'm
then
saying.
Can you imagine if he pulls him in that game in yeah. that situation?
Why start now?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Lord. He shouldn't be doing it then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like
But he should have been doing it to begin
yeah.
with.
Right.
The time to address this was
God,
a few
I
weeks
hate
ago.
When he does that.
Yeah, the time to address this was a few weeks ago. The Phillies needed to win this game on Sunday. That was the priority. The time for teaching lessons was a few months ago. And even if Kapler had pulled Cesar from the lineup at this point, it would have been a hollow gesture because you know they don't really believe it. You know that he only would have been pulled from the game in order to head off any criticism from us or the radio or the TV or, you know, Tom McCarthy and Ben Davis were both all over Cesar Hernandez the second it happened. I mean, it was just plain for everybody to see, and they didn't pull him because they knew that this game meant more than making a point that nobody on the team really believes in anyway. And
right.
so, yeah, I think Kapler did the right thing by not taking him out. That might not be what the general consensus feels. But
don't phrase it like yeah. that. Don't give Kapler points
I'm
for
not
this.
Giving him points.
He doesn't deserve
I'm not giving
it.
Him points. I'm saying...
No, because he made the wrong decision early
yes.
on and has been continuing to make this wrong decision. Like, hustling is usually blown out of proportion, but when it becomes a habit like it has with this team, you have to do something, and you have to do something early. After, like, the second or third time, start suspending players, and that was now ages ago.
Yeah.
He deserves no point or no credit. He now just gets to fall backward into like the soft foam of his own, you know, wishy-washy decisions and speechifying.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of him not answering questions.
Also,
just saying.
By no means was I trying to give Kapler credit.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Oh, no.
I was just saying, phrasing it like that. Gabe Kapler did the right thing. I'm just sick of people falling ass over tea kettle trying to find things to give Gabe Kapler credit for, which I don't know why that's happening right now. But Cesar is 29 years old, by the way. He's been in the league 7 years.
Yeah.
He knows not to do that. This isn't a lesson anybody should be learning at this point in the season. The Phillies aren't a bunch of hard scrapping rookies right now. There's mostly guys who've been in the league for the better part of a decade on this team, you know? Like
yeah.
Gene Segura's 29 years old too. He's been in the league 8 years. Like, these are not the guys you should be having to tell to hustle
right.
at
right.
this point in the season or any point in the season.
Right.
You know, they should be able to know, okay, I don't have to run this play out because I'm a professional athlete and my body's how I make money and it's a pop-up and I know how this goes. And, you know, 9.5 times out of 10, it goes the way I think it's going to go. And look, it went that way and everything's fine and nobody's complaining. But this is, you know, this is not that. It sucks that this has had to been. If the goal is to win the game, if the goal is to win more games, if the goal is to win several games in a row, if the goal is to win enough games to make the playoffs, then it's going to be what it's going to be isn't really the philosophy this team needs to have at its core right now.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. It's definitely frustrating, and I wish the Phillies hitters would stop feeding into this narrative so we could just be done with it. But it looks like it's just a culture thing with this team with many different players. And it's players across the board. We've seen some of the stars do it. We've seen some of the guys like Hernandez and Segura do it. We've seen it all over the place. And it's too late to learn a lesson now. The Phillies have to win as many games as possible from here on out. And it looks like Bryce Harper will be back on Monday from paternity leave. To
he
help
gets
things
three
out.
Whole days.
Yeah,
three
isn't that amazing?
Whole days. Congratulations, Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Great job.
Yeah, it just kind of sucks. It'd be nice to be able to spend more time with your new child. But unfortunately,
who cares? This team's got a wild card spot to fall two games shy of.
That's right. I did think it was interesting, some of this stuff in the wake of the Phillies demoting Nick Pivetta back to AAA again, because we heard Gabe Kapler talk about Nick Pivetta needing to be more accountable for his own performance. Apparently, I think, you know,
what does that mean?
I think there what we have going on with Nick Pivetta is one of the, you know, he gave up five runs in the game on Friday. Only one of them was earned. There were four unearned runs because of some poor defense played behind him. To me, that sounded like a guy who doesn't really think he has been doing all that badly, that putting the blame on other people, other teammates, bad defense, bad coaching, something like that. That's the impression that I get from those comments by Kapler, that Pivetta is not owning up to his part, his role in some of his struggles this year, not owning up to the fact that when things do go wrong, that he implodes and doesn't seem to be able to get past any of it. And so Pivetta now gets demoted back to AAA. And I do think it's interesting that Vince Velasquez has not spent a single second in AAA this year. And I just think that it, again, is interesting to me why one guy has been sent down twice and one guy has not been sent down. And the only thing that I can think of is attitude. It seems to me, I think Vince Velasquez is pretty accountable. After the game on Friday, he was very he was very accountable for his role in blowing the 7-0 lead. And I think that's great. I would prefer you not blow the 7-run lead. But, you know, Velasquez has at times pitched okay this season. Not great, not well. But I think okay is all you can ask of Vince Velasquez at this point. Until next season when the Phillies overhaul this pitching staff, there's a reason, I guess, Velasquez has not been sent down at all. But, Liz, did you read anything into those comments by Kapler about Pivetta needing to hold himself more accountable? And then, in relation to what he said about Cesar Hernandez and his lack of hustle today, comparing and contrasting those two comments, it seems to me like he's holding one player to a different set of standards than another.
Especially since, have we heard Nick Pivetta say anything that made it seem like he was not being fully accountable?
I don't think publicly. I'm saying. I wonder if it's stuff that's in private, you know, that to the pitching coaches and all that.
Like, sure. Like, here's what we want. Like, it's like Kapler's course corrected. He's saying things about his players, which is great. We wanted this. We wanted him to, you know, come down on them and act like he knows what's happening in front of his face. But now he's saying things about stuff we don't know about. Like, we can infer, but there are no facts and evidence about this. Like, we have no idea. Like, I mean, you could be right. It sounds very much like that. You don't say something like, you know, he needs to hold himself more accountable. You don't say that if someone is holding themselves accountable. Obviously, he's not. But we have no clue. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, we can infer that, you know, Velasquez, you know, he's gone out. He's said, you know, he's taken responsibility for his pitching. And, you know, he talks about imploding, and it's great. But, you know, we just don't know. Again, we have no idea. And unless he's going to explain to us, it does just seem like he's holding two players to wildly different standards because we have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
I hate that. Like, I know it's not our right to know what's happening, but if he's going to say things out loud into a microphone on the record, he has to at least explain himself or say things that make sense. Is this too much to ask? Like, do other managers do this? They just, like, just, you know, Tito Francona just, like, say random things about his players that no one has any idea about?
I'm not aware of it.
It doesn't seem like it.
I don't think so. I mean, because Justin, I don't think you would disagree that, you know, sending Nick Pivetta down is the wrong move. I mean, we were railing about Nick Pivetta and the continued success.
Goodbye to him.
Nobody's really, you know, crying over Nick Pivetta at this point not being on the big league roster. He hasn't proven, and I don't see, you know, Justin, if you're Nick Pivetta, how can you put the blame on anybody else? Look at your numbers. That's to, you know, how can you look at yourself in the mirror? Are you that, how can someone be deluded enough to think that, given the performance that he's put out this year, that it isn't as much on him as anybody else?
I don't know. Maybe you should ask Jake Pivetta. I said in my head, don't say Jake Pivetta. Say Jake Arrieta.
Jake
and
Arrieta,
I screwed it up.
Learn from the master.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a lot of that, huh?
Yeah. I think
this
in this...
some great leadership on this team, guys.
In this case, you know, Vince Velasquez was really, really good at the self-flagellating routine where he would come out to the press after a bad start and just destroy himself and talk so negatively about himself to the point that it was like, where is this kid's head at? Like, this, you know, I feel bad for him, but at the same time, this isn't going to help. Like, yeah, it's almost like he wanted to get ahead of the criticism, you know, say it himself before anybody else could get him with it. And I think we've seen less of that this year. He's definitely come down. He's honest and straightforward when he has a bad start or a less than, you know, good start, when something happens that the reporters want to talk to him about. You know, I've seen a couple of times this season, he speaks pretty candidly about that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like he's as crushing himself as much, at least in public, with statements like he would make in the past couple of years. Pivetta, I mean, it's not that Pivetta's also been doing that, but we've seen that he tends to come apart on the mound. So that just, again, comes into the mental makeup, the mental stamina aspect of pitching, which we know for young pitchers is really important. Phillies hired Jeff Miller, the mental skills coach. Was it before last season?
Yeah, I think so.
Obviously, that was going to be an avenue they went down. So, I mean, there's an outside chance that Velasquez has made some progress in that regard, and Pivetta is falling more victim to it. And maybe that's what he's referring to by accountability. But Gabe Kapler's definition of accountability, I mean, I talked about it in a piece before the season, just about the leadership that's going to be available for this team, and that his definition of it, based on his history with accountability, might be a little warped. And, you know, he said there was going to be a big change this year. He said literally before the season, when things aren't going the way that they should, it is always my responsibility to step up and be accountable for those things, and I will do that in this situation as well. Well, you know what? If we're going to talk about accountability in Nick Pivetta's case, it's kind of really unfair. It's been a real scattershot of accountability as far as players being held to certain standards this year for the Phillies. And, you know, I don't know if you could say he's picking and choosing where he wants to hold guys accountable, but it's definitely following a set of standards that isn't always the most consistent, I would say. There's not a list of rules, it doesn't seem like, pinned up in the Phillies clubhouse where guys know if they fall short in this regard, they're going to hear from their manager. It's more like, if you fall short in this regard and we didn't like it on this particular day, then Gabe Kapler's going to say some veteran leadership of some kind is going to come find you and talk to you about it. Who knows what's going on? Like Liz said, there's very little we know as far as the inner workings of this team goes. But, I mean, the accountability has not been as strong as we were told it was going to be, especially with that being a huge change coming into 2019 as opposed to 2018. And, it gets easier to see as the season goes on.
Well, up next, let's talk a little bit about Zach Eflin's start on Saturday. I thought something that he said after the game on Saturday was very interesting in regards to Chris Young and the coaching staff and Scott Kingery, oddly enough. And I do want to end the podcast on something relatively positive, and I have something in mind to finish things up on a more positive note here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So, guys, I thought something Zach Eflin said after his start on Saturday was interesting. And it reminded me a lot of the approach that Scott Kingery is taking to his offensive season this year. We know Kingery's had a bounce-back season. He's got a slugging percentage right around 500, which is among the best on the team. I think he's got a better slugging percentage than Bryce Harper does this year, if the last numbers that I looked at are still accurate. And you know, obviously, a lot of that has come from the fact that he decided to kind of do his own thing, to be the hitter that he's always been, a little bit more aggressive, not do the thing where, you know, stressing, where the team stresses patience, see as many pitches as possible, patience, see as many pitches as possible, and then, you know, try and find a pitch to hit. He's been a little bit more aggressive, which ran counter to what John Mailey and the Phillies are teaching the majority of their hitters. Well, Zach Eflin decided that he's not going to be doing the whole trying to keep his fastball up in the zone as often as the Phillies would like. He's going to go back to being the sinker ball pitcher that he's always been. And I thought it was interesting because that's not what the Phillies want him to do. That's not what Chris Young and the Phillies preach to their pitchers. They want their guys to have with the high spin rates and the high fastballs up in the zone to generate swing and miss, as opposed to keeping the ball down and getting guys to put the ball in play. And to me, this is another example of a younger player deciding to go against what the organization preaches for its players in order to find success. Because, I mean, Eflin struggled with a lot of what the Phillies wanted him to do with the high fastballs. When he would miss, He just couldn't. He'd miss right over the middle of the plate. He couldn't consistently locate the high fastball. So he went back to his sinker on Saturday night and was really efficient, like he had been earlier in the season when he had a couple of complete games at around 100 pitches or so. And so this really calls into question for me the effectiveness of Chris Young. I know that in the piece after the game on Saturday that the beat writers wrote that Young was said he was very receptive to the changes Eflin wanted to make. And, you know, what's he going to say? No, I really fought hard, but this is what Zach wanted to do. You know, this is obviously the pitching coach is going to try and go along with, I think, what the pitcher wants to do. But this is another instance, and we'll see how it goes here towards the end of the season with Eflin, whether or not he continues to use his sinker, whether or not better hitting teams than the Marlins are able to square him up on a more regular basis. But Justin, to me, this is a situation where I think I'm seeing another young player going against the grain of what Phillies coaches want them to do. And we'll see whether or not Eflin has the kind of success over the last month that Scott Kingery's had all season.
We don't know what the right combination of ideas is for this team to succeed, because they've yet to find any sort of sustained success since this like new approach idea kind of came to the team through the form of the new front office, the new management, and then slowly the integration of all the driveline philosophies and all these guys Gabe Kapler used to work with, and prioritizing keeping Chris Young on staff as opposed to Rick Kranitz. I mean, there's definitely a more what has been characterized as modern or analytic fuel running through this team now. And I'm of the mind that the Phillies have really swung hard at this, and probably a little too hard. It just seems very dramatic that at times we're looking at a team that seems to ignore reality or common sense in favor of the philosophies, the baseball philosophy they've chosen as far as development, as far as strategy, as far as the dreaded analytics word. These things are definitely a tool to a successful baseball team in 2019, but I feel like they've gone so hard that maybe this is the outcome of that. That guys who are being told, all right, look, don't do this, do this. Trust us, it's going to work. And then they, you know, listen to our podcast and listen to us talk about how somebody like Zach Eflin, somebody like all those other young pitchers that haven't really worked out are struggling. And they think, yeah, you know what? Maybe I'm going to just go back to what I know. Maybe I'm going to go back to what I was doing before because that's comfortable. I know how to do it. I can still use, you know, this coaching staff's input. But, like, I kind of feel like I want to go try something else that seemed like I could have made it work before. And if that doesn't work out for them, I'm not saying that's a recipe for success, then, you know, I still understand the impulse. I still understand, like, nothing else is working. I'm going to go back to what I know. So, I don't know. I feel like there's a chance this could be a byproduct of that. You know, I'm not trying to vilify analytics here. I'm not trying to go that full, that far. I don't think you could say that I'm a noted critic of analytics, but I do think the Phillies have gone real, real hard after it. And this, you know, this could be a result of that. Guys being like, I just want to play baseball the way I did before.
Yeah. Liz, what do you think about that? Do you think there's something to that about Phillies? I mean, other baseball teams like the Astros and the Red Sox and the Dodgers, they teach their pitchers the same thing, and they seem to have success at it. You think there's too much analysis going on here, or is it just we've got some coaches who don't know how to get these guys to do it the way that the Astros seem to be able to get their pitchers to do it?
I think it's a combination of finding, you know, the right amount to tell your players to do things a certain way and letting them do their own thing. You know, the Astros are actually pretty notorious for forcing their players into a certain model. You know, they did it to Mark Appel, and it ruined his career. Mm-hmm. They told him to stop being the pitcher that he was, and he couldn't figure out how to do it again once he stopped doing it. You know, that's one example. It's anecdotal, but, you know, there are players we probably hear about that we don't hear about who have gone back to doing things their own way. And the Phillies need to find that balance. You know, they have to be receptive to changes, because if the players aren't comfortable, in the end, it's their decision. You know, if they don't want to, you know, go with the program, they could do what they did to J.P. Crawford and ship him off somewhere else. You know, but you can't do that to everybody. If they're players that you want to keep that have potential and what you're telling them isn't working, then you have to let them do their own thing. I'm sure it bothers them that they have actually talked about it to the press.
Yeah.
But if the players are frustrated and they finally find success, they're going to talk about that. They're going to say, I had to go back to doing what made me comfortable. And, you know, I had to go back to doing what makes me me. You know, they're going to gain some expertise, you know, some knowledge from the training that they've gotten. You know, Chris Young couldn't have been, you know, we have no idea if he's completely useless.
Right.
We have no idea if any coach is completely useless. But, you know, you would assume that he's learned something from him and he's using that in, you know, adjusting his own repertoire, how he sees fit. And I think every player should have the freedom to do that, especially if they're receptive to teaching and, you know, they've been trying it. If it's not working, they just can't make him do the same thing over and over.
Right.
It's got to be painful for, like, it had to be painful for Zach Eflin to just see himself falter when he's doing it the way that they wanted him to.
Yeah, and especially because he seemed to be a different kind of pitcher earlier in the season when he was throwing those complete games and getting a lot of ground balls. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, then all of a sudden the heavy body stuff started coming along. And you know, I don't, you know, maybe this was just a situation where Zach Eflin got past a heavy body thing and he decided to switch things up. But he says it was when he was demoted to the bullpen that he started to question whether or not that he needed to go back to being the pitcher that he had always been. I mean, Eflin is not my favorite pitcher. I don't think his stuff is great. I don't think he's got a swing and miss arsenal. I think if he gets ahead two strikes, he doesn't really have anything. So I think he has to be a contact guy and a ground ball guy. And the Phillies defense has been a little bit better this year. It's not as bad as it was last year when a ground ball was hit and you just covered your eyes and you know, hope for the best. So we'll see what Eflin does here over the last month or so, because the Phillies really need just one more guy to be somewhat reliable if they do want to have a chance at a wild card here over the last month. And I guess of all the guys we've been talking about, Velasquez or Pivetta or anything, Eflin is probably the guy I would feel the best about giving them at least 1 month of semi-competent starting pitching. That's not a high bar to have to hurdle. I certainly think he's got a better shot at it than Drew Smyly does. So we're not
semi-competent.
Yeah,
like
semi-competent.
We're not even, there isn't even a bar. It's just the ground.
Exactly. And Eflin for the first 2 months of the season was pitching like a guy threatening to make the All-Star team. So who the heck knows, but I do think it's interesting. This is another young player who kind of was going back and saying, yeah, I think I need to do things my way a little bit here. And we'll see how it plays out over the last month or so. So let's end on something positive here. Let's talk a little bit about JT Realmuto and his defense, guys. He threw out his 30th base runner on Sunday, 13 more than any other catcher in baseball. It's amazing that teams still run on JT Realmuto. And I was looking at some of the Fangraphs defensive numbers. And defensive metrics, as we all know, are hinky. You can't really rely on a lot of these different things. But I will just say, I'll just put this out there that according to Fangraph's total defensive rating, the DEF number that they have on their page, JT Realmuto, according to this number, is the best defensive player in baseball. He's got a higher defensive rating than any other person at any other position in the sport. And whether or not that's true, I think the one thing that you can absolutely say is that his defense has been unbelievable this year, Liz. I mean, I can't remember ever seeing a catcher play better defense than what JT Realmuto has given this team this year. Maybe Pudge Rodriguez has had better defensive seasons, but I can't remember anything like this.
I can't either. I love watching. I love good catcher defense. You know, it's sudden, it's fun, it's dramatic. You know, however he's been at the plate, his defense has been a highlight. It's been so much better. And I was a huge Jorge Alfaro fan, but it's nice to go from a guy still learning how to do stuff behind the plate to a guy who needs no instruction and who is actually better off left alone. Just leave him alone. Leave him alone to do what he was clearly born to do.
Yeah. No, and Justin, he's played a lot this year, too. Realmuto is racking up the games behind the dish because Andrew Knapp really has been abysmal. I mean, you can't start Andrew Knapp. I mean, more than once or twice over the last month of the season, it's going to be Realmuto, and I'm a little bit worried about him wearing down. But, man, his ability to – his release – from, you know, his pop time, his release behind the plate is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. Runners just have no shot against him.
Lock him up.
Let's do that.
Gotta do it.
Do it.
Yeah.
Gotta do it. Can't not do it. Hey, Phillies, instead of not doing it, do it. Do it.
Gotta happen.
100% gotta happen. Yeah. And while we're on the topic of fun statistics, John, I thought I would share a fun statistic I stumbled upon while you were talking, which is that the Miami Marlins have scored 81 runs on the Philadelphia Phillies in 2019.
That's 81 runs.
Wow. The second most runs the Marlins have scored against a team are the Atlanta Braves, against whom they have scored 54 runs.
Oh, my gosh.
So let's enjoy that.
We need a sound effect whenever Justin says, I found a fun statistic. Some kind of foreboding, groaning sound. Something, yeah, because... It's never good.
No,
oh, God.
No. Justin brings the fun there. That's a great
stat.
You were 19 runs on them
in one game this weekend.
Yeah. You were trying to end on a positive note.
Yeah. No, Justin was not going to allow that to happen. Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, guys, Justin, any final thoughts other than that really awesome statistic you threw our way here before we wrap things up?
Hey, two days ago, the Washington Post said that the NL East would be the most exciting division to see in the last month of the season. So let's all consider that the Phillies have that honor of playing in a division that'll be just exciting to watch another team win.
It truly has been exciting. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
My hope for this week is the hope that I've had for many weeks. I just want them to be better than they were. Most recently,
but at this
if
point,
they could just be better.
At this point, that would require them to be better than they are, and that just, you know, have they hit their ceiling? Probably, right?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm not ready for the death of hope entirely. Like, it's an achievable goal. It's not even a lot better. Just be a little better. Don't make me want to, you know, run my car into a tree. Yeah. Don't make me want to turn the game off by throwing my remote at the television. Maybe if I want to turn the game off, it won't be so bad, and I could just turn it off like a normal person.
I'll say this. Yeah. If we're on the cusp of a 2007 Phillies miracle run, that's awesome. And I will enjoy that as much as everyone else. Honestly, I will. But every week on this podcast, we are talking about another reason why that is not going to happen. So that, to this point, is just, I think both things are credible. If the baseball season's going to be this long, then let's enjoy it for what that means, which is that the Phillies have a chance to make the playoffs for a little longer than they probably deserve. Because part of that same Washington Post article is the Fangraphs data from 2 days ago that indicated the Braves have a 99% chance of making the playoffs. The Nationals have a 90% chance of making the playoffs. The Phillies have an 11% chance of making the playoffs. Also, the Mets have a 51% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah.
Marlins have zero.
Well, if they played the Phillies every week, the Marlins would be division winners. And that's
true. Again, this data was from 2 days ago, so the Marlins have clearly skyrocketed in that time.
Well, the Phillies get the Pirates for 3 games to start this week in Philadelphia, so coming back home might help. But, you know, with this team, there's just nothing you can rely on. There's nothing you can bank on. So we'll just see what happens here over the next few days and over this homestand as the Phillies come back to Philadelphia with their tail between their legs, having lost 2 of 3 to the Miami Marlins. And yet, still just a game and a half out of the wild card. The rest of the National League playing a cruel joke on Phillies fans by keeping this team alive so far. We'll see what happens here over the last month or so. Oh, it's just great. It's just great. More, you know, we could spend our evenings with our family and doing other things, you know, learning about history. We could go on nature walks and whatnot, but we watch the Phillies in the evenings because we think, you know, they're so close to the playoffs. Well, the joke's on us. But we'll continue to watch, and thank you. If you listen to this whole podcast, you are as hopeless as we are. I'm guessing a lot of folks just had it automatically download into their Apple podcast, which is fine by us. So tell your friends about the podcast if they're hopeless like you are. Make sure they subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever
you don't
it is
have
they
to
get
listen,
the podcast.
Just download it.
That's all we need. We need those DLs, baby. And check out the Patreon, because we do some other things outside of just talking about what a terrible baseball team this is or how terrible they're playing right now. We've got some bonus stuff up at the Patreon, and more stuff will go up there all the time. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.